This is Mark Langdon's Bets Club.
Hello and a warm welcome to Mark Langdon's Bets Club, your one-stop shop for football betting insights. So good to be back. Jack Reeve joined alongside Mark Langdon himself to guide you through proceedings today. Mark, I suspect you're recording this with a big smile on your face after the first weekend of Premier League action, aren't you?
Yeah. Or as a Tottenham fan, yeah, it couldn't have gone too much better, really. I mean, we had the traditional feeling of, oh, here we go again, when James Ward-Prowse smashed one in from the edge of the area. But overall, it was a very convincing performance from Tottenham. And a really sunny day. Everyone was happy, sort of fans-wise. And onwards and upwards. Nothing like a trip to Chelsea, though, to drag you back down again. We don't go well at Stamford Bridge, I think it's fair to say.
Well, we'll see. We'll see about that. We'll be previewing that shortly. Let's talk about teams that maybe still need to do some transfer business then. Of course, the transfer window is still open, still very much business as usual on that front. Let's start with Manchester United, Mark, who got their season off to a horrendous start, very much the Manchester United of old there. Business still to be done for them, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's been a chaotic week for them, you know, not only losing to Brighton, then the Arnautovic business where, you know, they're being linked with somebody that I just can't believe is good enough at this stage of his career to be leading the line for United. Rabiot in midfield, somebody that's, he's always flattered to deceive. I think it's amazing he's got sort of PSG and Juventus on his sort of CV. And if you were doing like an article on 10 players Manchester United shouldn't sign from like for what they need in that dressing room, then Rabiot and Arnautovic would have been in there. Now, the fact that they've gone off Arnautovic seemingly after the fans were upset, I mean, that feels just another, a bit tin pot really for Manchester United, because if you believe he's good enough, then go and get him. Go and pay the money and bring him in. If you don't think he's good enough, then what are you doing in the first place? And if the fans don't think he's good enough, that really shouldn't be playing into your minds. And I don't see Rabiot, you could argue, is better than what United have got in central midfield. And he probably is a slight notch up on McTominay and Fred. But I don't think that he is the type of character really that Manchester United need in that dressing room, and I don't feel like he improves them enough to take on the baggage that comes with him.
Absolutely. In terms of another Premier League side, Chelsea, now Timo Werner has left there. Does that open up a slot? Do you think they need another striker?
I think they're absolutely desperate for a striker. I mean, unless they sign a striker, I'm not sure they'll finish in the top four this season. I think that there's Arsenal have shown enough already last season and also in the opening week at Palace to suggest that, that they're probably going to take a step forward. Don't see any reason why Tottenham are going to be any worse. So I mean that Chelsea really do need to sign a striker. I mean, Timo Werner was a flop. He won the Champions League, but he wasn't good enough, completely like lost his way, and all being offside wasn't unlucky. That's bad play if you keep on being offside. It's just the strikers have been linked with. Aubameyang, I mean, I would not have him down as exactly what Chelsea need. I think his best days are behind him. It might be a bit of a panic signing, but I would say that Chelsea, in doing the work they've already done, if they've kind of made, I don't think they've taken that step forward that I just mentioned about with Arsenal. They're kind of plugging gaps that needed filling. And you might say that Cucurella maybe improves them a little bit down that left-hand side. But I don't think that Sterling is going to score the goals that Chelsea will need. So, yeah, I definitely think they need a striker. And I think they probably need another defender as well. Maybe even a midfielder. Now, their team could look completely different in 2 weeks' time. And all of a sudden, they've got a top centre forward in there. Frankie de Jong is pulling the strings in midfield, and they're looking in really good shape. But that performance at Everton last week was so-so, I think, from Chelsea. So, yeah, definitely feel like, in terms of last season's top four, they're the ones that need most work to do.
In terms of Liverpool, their season didn't start the way they would have liked with that draw away to Fulham. Thiago's injury, does that open up a situation where they're probably in the market for another midfielder?
Well, I know that their fans are calling for that, but I mean, that's not the way that Liverpool operate. You know, they don't waste their money. They wait until their targets become available. You know, I think it's well known that they want Jude Bellingham and they might have to wait another year to land him. And you don't want to be spending 30 million on somebody that you just don't believe in. You know, if Liverpool felt like they had, there was a midfielder on the market for them to buy, they would have already bought them. And, you know, I think that Klopp does it right. I think he trusts in the younger players. So if that's Curtis Jones, if that's Harvey Elliott or Carvalho, the one that the guy they signed from Fulham, then so be it. If they have to change their formation and maybe drop Firmino in behind the front three, then maybe they have to look at doing that. But I would, if I was Liverpool, I would guard against wasting money at this stage, because that might be the difference between getting Bellingham next season, you know, whether you've got that extra 20, 30, 40 million. And what they did with Van Dijk, so patient, even with Luis Diaz, eventually they were forced into the Diaz deal in January. I think they wanted to wait until the summer, but he'd been identified before then. And, you know, that's what Liverpool have done so well over the last 5 years. It's what's taken them to this position of strength now. I don't think you sort of throw it in the bin just because you've got another injury.
Okay. In terms of the 20 Premier League teams, then, what size do you think still have the most work to do in the last couple of weeks of the transfer window?
Yeah, so I don't know if this is just the bias of being at the game on Saturday, but I thought Southampton were a long way short. And I've been a big sort of advocate of what Southampton have done in the last few years, in the way that they've sort of stayed up and, you know, made money at the same time. They were really lightweight at Spurs, like nothing up front. Aribo and Adam Armstrong, just that's not going to keep you up. And then in midfield, they were all right. And the guy from Man City, Lavia, came in and looked neat and tidy with him. Romeu and Ward-Prowse, you know, that's got the decent makings of a fair midfield three. But the rest of them were really lightweight, didn't play particularly well at all. And I know it was a difficult game at Spurs. Even Bazunu, the goalkeeper, he made a couple of decent saves, but wasn't good, but really nervous with his feet. And, you know, if you want to play out from the back, you need to be able to do that. And I know that Bournemouth started with a win and they are starting to make a couple of moves. But I still think that Bournemouth team over 38 matches still needs some squad strengthening. So I would say them, and we've already spoken about them, but Manchester United, they've got to bring, I think they need at least one fullback in the right back, and maybe two, but definitely a right back. I think they need two midfielders and one forward. And I'm not talking about squad players. I'm talking about players to come in and play in the first team. So they would be the teams I'd be most sort of looking at, thinking work to be done.
Just a really quick word, Mark, on Nottingham Forest, who've come up and made a statement, particularly with the amount of money that they've spent. Do you think that will work out for them, or could this come back to bite them?
I don't think we should label it as another Fulham just because it didn't work out for Fulham. They had five players in that team that won the Championship playoff final that are no longer at the club. So they had to make sort of at least those amount of signings, and then you want to be better the next year. So maybe it's going to be a difficult job for the manager, Steve Cooper, but I actually feel like they probably needed to sort of make these amounts of investments, otherwise they would have just gone down anyway.
Okay, there's a big one up at Stamford Bridge this weekend as Chelsea host Tottenham. Let's preview that now. Yeah, it's our match of the day, Chelsea against Spurs. 13-10 Chelsea, 21-10 Tottenham, 12-5 the draw. This one on Sunday at 4:30 p.m. Mark, both sides here started their campaign with wins. You would argue that Spurs were more convincing for their 3 points. It was a thrilling display from Tottenham in the end.
It was in the sort of first 15, 20 minutes. Wasn't great. It was quite hot, and I don't know if they were maybe trying to hold a little bit back, but wasn't a particularly good start. But once they got the equaliser, they really stepped up and played well. Second half, it was, I forget the word Hasenhüttl will use, but it's something like they smashed us. And it was like that, really. It was just wave after wave. They were winning the ball back really high. Everybody knew what they were doing. I think you saw what Conte wants from the wing backs, with Sessegnon getting one goal. Emerson Royale was involved in the goal, the sort of own goal from Salisu, and then provided the assist for Kulusevski. And yeah, Kulusevski was the player, really, for Tottenham. It's not often Tottenham score four, and Kane and Son are not at their best. But I think with Kulusevski sort of at their level at the moment, it doesn't matter which one of them plays well, as long as one of them does. And yeah, it was a really settled performance. You were talking earlier there, Jack, about Nottingham Forest and all of their new signings. Completely different for Tottenham, because got one new signing in the starting 11. So they were able to kind of, start where they left off. And then the quality for them was in the bench when you're bringing on Perisic and Lenglet and Bissouma and Matt Doherty, players that I think, would start for a lot of Premier League teams. And Richarlison was suspended for the game. So all of a sudden, with that and Lucas Moura as well, there's a real depth to that Tottenham team. Now, you have got to be wary, because I think it's really easy to fall into the trap of everybody thought that Tottenham would be better this season, and they start well. And so you go, right, yeah, that's it. This is definitely going to happen, because confirmation bias is it's alive and real, and it's very difficult to not have that in your makeup. Never mind as a punter, I think in life, confirmation bias is really dangerous. That being said, it was a good start. It was only one game. It was home to Southampton. Chelsea away is a completely different story, and this will tell us a lot more about where Spurs are at.
Well, yeah, absolutely right. And Chelsea won all four games against Spurs last season, all to nil. What did you make of Chelsea's opener? They got through against Everton, clean sheet, not as convincing as Spurs, but still a decent start for them.
Yeah, I think really they're not ready for the start of the season. Thomas Tuchel mentioned that. You're bringing in players like Cucurella, made his debut. I mean, he'd only signed the day before. You bring in Koulibaly and Sterling into the team. That's not an easy thing to do in both boxes, to integrate new players. Even though Sterling's played in the Premier League, he hasn't played for Chelsea before. They play completely differently to Manchester City. And so I think there would be that time to adapt. Also, Thomas Tuchel said that some of the players weren't fully fit. Chilwell, don't think Reece James was 100%. Azpilicueta, up until a few days ago, was being linked with a move to Barcelona. We've seen N'Golo Kante be linked with moves away in the summer as well. So I think he's had a difficult summer. Obviously, the change of ownership has meant that they've done their business a little bit later than ideal. You think of all the people behind the scenes at Chelsea that have left. So I think while they're bedding in the new players and just trying to get to grips with a new season, you've just got to win, because they know if they've got any chance of the title. And that's what we should be talking about with Chelsea. They were 5-1 this time last season, and then nobody's talking about them for the title this season. I think inwardly they'll be thinking that, a team like Chelsea should be challenging for the title. Manchester City allow you so few slip-ups in a season. You can't afford to start slowly. So I think while you're not sort of in the best shape, just win and then, think about the next game. The clean sheet, they were massively helped by the fact that Everton had no strikers. I mean, my tip for that game and the nap was for Chelsea to win in under 3.5 goals. I just couldn't see where Everton were going to score. As I said, it's a completely different game for Tottenham to what they played against Southampton. Completely different for Chelsea trying to stop Son, Kane and Kulusevski is what it was, let's put it frankly, a very lightweight Everton attack.
Nothing like trying to predict the rest of the season after one game, Mark. But from the very early looks at both of these sides, who do you think are going to finish higher in the Premier League this season?
I think I'd edge towards Tottenham at the moment. And that is with the asterisk next to it, that if Chelsea make the signings that they could do, you're made to look a bit silly. And, in 2 weeks' time, I might have a different answer. At the moment, with Conte, starting to build something, I think, at Tottenham, they're the more likely, I would say, to finish third. And I would struggle to think any of the two teams could finish higher than that. But finishing third would still be a decent achievement. And I think that Tottenham are the more likely at the moment.
Okay. Do you think they're the more likely to win this weekend?
No, I don't. I think that the best bet here is under 2.5 goals. There's a heat wave for most of the country, definitely in London at the weekend. So we're looking at 33 degrees, and that's not easy to play football in. So it might be a sort of slower pace London derby than you'd be expecting. As you mentioned earlier, Chelsea won all four games to nil last season. It was only 8-0, though, on aggregate. So there were a lot of low-scoring games between the two teams. In fact, 6 of the last 7 between them have been under 2.5 goals. There have only been 11 goals in that time. I'm not sure about Chelsea's front three, but I'm pretty sure about the solid 5 they've got defensively and Jorginho and Kante in front of them. You know, that's going to be difficult. From Tottenham's point of view, they'll look at those games last season and say there was no Emerson Royale, there was no Romero, there was no Bentancur, there was no Kulusevski. Son was missing from the Premier League game as well at Stamford Bridge. So they're a different beast this time around. You've got two really top quality managers as well going head to head. I just think it's got all the hallmarks really of being a tight game.
Okay, looking forward to it and certainly looking forward to the rest of the Premier League as well. There's plenty of action this weekend. Let's get stuck into that now. And it all starts with Aston Villa against Everton. This is the early kickoff on Saturday, 12:30. In terms of disappointments from the opening week, Mark, you certainly have Aston Villa in that bracket. I think there's some grumbles starting to come out of from the Villa Park faithful at the moment.
Yeah, it was a shocking start from Aston Villa. You know, they conceded after 2 minutes at Bournemouth. So they're chasing the match for 88 minutes and they've managed to have 2 shots on target against a newly promoted team and the relegation favourite. So awful from Aston Villa. As far as Everton were concerned, you know, it was always going to be difficult. No strikers available. You're playing Chelsea anyway. Godfrey and Mina get injured as well. So I think there were more excuses for Everton. In this game, it's going to be a hot one all over the country, isn't it, this weekend? I'm going to go for under 2.5 goals in this game. The fact that Villa only had 2 shots on target tells a story. And with Calvert-Lewin out for Everton, I'm still not sure where they're going to score their goals, but at least the arrival of Cody, you know, plugs a gap in defence for them.
Yeah, low-scoring affair there. We spoke about a disappointing start for Aston Villa. One team that will be really pleased with their opening performance was Arsenal. They take on Leicester this weekend. The first of the Saturday 3 o'clock fixtures we'll be previewing here. I thought Arsenal looked sharp, Mark. Gabriel Jesus was really promising and just looked really cohesive.
Yeah, they did. Certainly first 20 minutes, they were, you know, all over Crystal Palace. Jesus looked lively. You look at that sort of front three and you can see what Arteta's trying to do with that. I thought Zinchenko, you know, in that left back, but drifting into midfield worked well. Xhaka was covering him quite nicely. Saliba made a very strong Premier League debut. So, yeah, my natural instinct when you sort of look at the price of Arsenal at 1-2 is to think that they're a lay against Leicester. But actually, there is also the potential, I think, for Arsenal to be a fair bit better than they were last season. When you think, you know, Saliba makes them better defensively, Zinchenko had something different in defence and in midfield, and then you've also got up front Jesus. So, they should be better, I think, Arsenal. So I'm going to go for Arsenal and both teams to score, despite playing much better at Selhurst Park than they did last season. They still did offer up 2 cracking opportunities. Palace couldn't take them. Leicester are better than Palace, I think, in the final third, just in terms of being able to take their chances. You know, you've got Vardy, got Madison, you've got players off the wings as well. So Arsenal and BTTS.
Yeah, really looking forward to that one. Brighton Newcastle on paper looks a really difficult one to call, Mark, both with pleasing opening day wins last weekend.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Brighton fantastic at United, and of course, it gets lost, doesn't it? Because it's United, you always focus on what they did wrong rather than, you know, how good Caicedo was in midfield for Brighton, for instance. But fantastic performance from them. Newcastle just looked really authoritative, I would say, against Nottingham Forest. Very calm, You know, it was a buoyant atmosphere, but they, you know, stayed patient, got the deserved win in the end. I think this might be a draw. 25 draws between them last season. Brighton had 15, you know, and they are a team. I know they got their goals at Old Trafford. They are a team. You still want to see them be more efficient in front of goal. Newcastle conceded only 8 goals in 16 games against teams that are not in the Champions League. So outside of the top four, they conceded half a goal a game in 2022. So Eddie Howe really tightened them up. So I think this might be a really intriguing game, but maybe also a low-scoring one.
Okay. Bournemouth are going to have their work cut out this weekend. They travel to the Etihad to play Manchester City. Mark, there was a lot of talk about Erling Haaland pre-season, particularly around the Golden Boot race. I think he's been shortened up in that, Mark, hasn't he? And it's easy to see why. Kevin De Bruyne and Haaland, that could be a potent force this season.
Yeah, it could. I mean, you know, I think what City have got to do is just give Haaland the ball quicker. They did that at times. It's not a natural thing for them because they are a patient side that, you know, likes to build up, you know, slower than maybe Haaland wants it. But it worked well at West Ham. I mean, this could be the biggest mismatch of the whole season. I mean, City are as short as 1-25 in places. I was looking at win to nil. That's like 8-15. I don't think you want to be getting involved in those sorts of prices. So 5-0 is 11-1. Man City scored at least 5 in 3 of their games against the bottom 4 at home last season. Now, I know Bournemouth made a good start, but I would still have them down as a bottom 4, bottom 5 team. And so if they are that, you know, maybe this is where you really do get Tonkin. Jack, you're a Norwich fan. You would have had a couple of thankless trips up to the Etihad.
Yeah, I don't miss it, Mark. I'll tell you that much. I don't miss it at all. Just a quick one on Haaland in the Golden Boot. Have your opinions changed? Because I think you were against him at the start, weren't you? Are you with him now?
I wouldn't say I'm with him. I mean, it was a decent start from him. But, you know, a lot of the other contenders, you know, Salah. I mean, Nunes looks absolutely brilliant for Liverpool, doesn't he? So, no, I wouldn't. Again, it's this confirmation bias of everyone expected Haaland to score goals. He gets 2, and therefore, yeah, he's the best thing since sliced bread. What I would say is that we weren't sure if he was going to take penalties. The fact that he's now on them is definitely a tick in his box. But no, I mean, there's a long way to go.
Okay. Southampton against Leeds. You weren't overly impressed with Southampton on the opening weekend. Leeds were victorious against Wolves. How do you see this one going?
I'm going to go for Leeds draw, no bet. I sent some Southampton fans are jumping on Hasenhüttl's back. And I always think that's a dodgy one when you're at home, because if things start going badly, it can be difficult, can't it, to win them back over. You know, they didn't finish well last season, been thumped on the opening day. They took a noisy contingent down to North London, but, you know, well beaten in the end. You know, I was with... unfortunately, with a load of them at Liverpool Street, they were making a right old racket, but not so loud on the way home. I just thought Leeds weren't amazing against Wolves, but also looked like they could be an interesting team. And I think I'd rather be with them at the prices. So Leeds draw, no bet.
Okay, let's preview Wolves against Fulham then. Fulham were impressive against Liverpool on their opening day. I think some questions have been answered around Alexander Mitrovic in the Premier League. In terms of Wolves, Mark, a lot of shrewd judges at the Racing Post were putting them up in terms of, you know, fancying them to go down this season, and hardly impressive on their opening game against Leeds.
Well, I thought they were unlucky at Leeds. I mean, Fulham did a great job against Liverpool. Do wonder, away from home, just how different things might be. And Wolves were around about 11-8, and that looked fair enough to me, because they dominated the sort of expected goals count at Leeds and just ended up on the wrong end of a result. Guedes has come in from Valencia. His name in Portuguese is really difficult to say, so I'm sticking to Guedes. I hope that the Portuguese name doesn't become the one that we have to go with. Chance Moutinho could be back as well. I thought he was missed in midfield. It's just that it to me, it's all about sort of not overreacting to one result. And at 11-8, I'm not sort of going to be against Wolves, I would say, at home to a newly promoted team.
Does feel big, that. Let's take a look at the Saturday evening game. All eyes on Manchester United as they travel to Brentford. And if you're Manchester United, this is probably the game you don't want up next after a disappointing defeat.
Oh, absolutely horrible game, but because you'll be expected to win. But Brentford move you around the pitch in very much the same way that Brighton do. There is, you know, they're well coached like Brighton are. There's similarities, not just because, you know, the two owners have both sort of got a football betting background as well. Manchester United, some firms are odds on Manchester United. I mean, you're going to find better odds on shots this season than backing United to win at Brentford. Three away wins at the bottom 13 last season for Manchester United. Now, that does include, actually, a 3-1 success at Brentford. But I looked at the shots on target count that day. It was 9-5 in favour of Brentford. They were unlucky to lose that game. Look, Man United might win because they've got better players, but I wouldn't be backing them odds on. So no. I'm going to go for Brentford or draw a double chance.
Okay. Two games on the Sunday. We've already previewed one of them. Let's take a look at the other. It's Forest against West Ham. What did you make of Forest's opening game, Mark?
Well, I thought they were terrible at Newcastle. You look at the stats, you know, they were well off it. But I thought it was a really hard away game. You know, mentioned just how enthusiastic that kind of Newcastle crowd is at the moment. One of the worst games you could have got, I think, outside of the obvious ones, was a trip to Newcastle when you're trying to bed in a completely new team. So I'm not going to write Nottingham Forest off after one game as this, oh, they're definitely a Fulham because, you know, they spent all this money, loads of new players, and it doesn't always work out like that. Bournemouth and Fulham had great results at the sort of first weekend. They were both at home. And so I think the City ground is going to be a big, big plus for Nottingham Forest this season. Certainly, at least early on, while the kind of that feel-good factor, I think, is still there, despite what happened last week. So I'm going to go for Nottingham Forest or draw double chance. Again, West Ham are odds on to win this match. And I just haven't seen enough from them yet to say, yeah, I really fancy them at odds on away from home. They've got a lot of defensive injuries at the moment. Didn't show up against Man City, but yeah, it's hard enough against Man City. So I can't sort of suddenly say they're going to go backwards. I still think that they're, you know, potentially sort of one of the best of the rest, if you like, outside of that top six. But I just think this is a situational game where you maybe don't want to be going to the City ground for Nottingham Forest's first home game in over 20 years back in the Premier League.
Absolutely. It's going to be raucous there, isn't it? Monday Night Football, Liverpool against Palace. Thoughts for this one, Mark?
Yeah, well, Liverpool have won the last 10 against Crystal Palace, scored at least twice in each of the last 9. So, I mean, I think Liverpool win. They've got a lot of injuries in midfield. And Palace are a decent side under Patrick Vieira. They're capable of causing shots. They won at the Etihad last season. I'm not sure about this game, really. Anfield feels like a step too far for them. But I was looking at Liverpool to win an under 3.5 goals because I think Palace are well organised and compact and decent defensively. 10 of their 12 matches against the Big Six last season finish with under 3.5 goals. So a kind of routine Liverpool win without it getting embarrassing for Palace is how I see it.
Okay, excellent stuff. That's the Premier League rounded off. Let's talk all things EFL with EFL guru Dan Childs.
And now we're talking all things EFL and we're joined by Dan Childs. Dan, it's great to have you back. Did you have a good holiday?
Yeah, no, very nice. Lovely break in Cornwall. But no, excited for the new football season, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you were still betting even though you were on the holiday.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, even getting involved in the EFL Cup first round the other night. So, yeah.
Excellent stuff. There were a couple of winners last night on racingpost.com there. So you come in good form. So I suppose first things first, really, and James has asked a question. Are there any teams you have backed anti-post after the first couple of games? And I suppose I had another question really on that. Just if there's anything you've learned from the first few weeks, anybody you're sort of more against than you maybe thought you would be or more with?
Probably more with certainly in the Championship with West, in the case of West Brom, and which might sound strange to say because they've drawn their opening two games, but just the manner of their performances. I had them down as probably being a top six side and not really challenging maybe the relegated clubs for the automatics, but I'm starting to change my mind now. I watched watched the game against Watford on the Monday, having been impressed with how they've come back and got the draw at Middlesbrough. And they really were dominant against Watford, much more impressive in their draw of Watford than Sheffield United were when they lost 1-0 at Watford on the opening weekend. And when you think of Sheffield United were probably one of the best teams not to go up last season, and then you compare, you know, you look at the way West Brom have started this season, a couple of the signings, John Swift in midfield and Jeb Wallace, it was thought they would add quite a bit of control and creativity for them, and it certainly has. They were really impressive against Watford. Wallace, I think he put in 14 crosses in the first half, and the quality of his crossing is amazing. I actually think he should have played in the Premier League, really. He's 28 now, and I don't know what he's been doing playing in the Championship for so long, but West Brom have got him, and you know that's giving them a great chance, I think, of going up this season.
Okay, anybody else that you sort of come onto the radar?
Yeah, I mean, a couple in League One. Portsmouth, another team that have had two draws, but one of them was a 3-3 draw at Sheffield Wednesday, which is a hell of a result. Sheffield Wednesday, I don't think, are going to drop too many points at home this season. And then they've gone on and won 3-0 away to Cardiff in the EFL Cup. But look at some of Portsmouth's business. They're having to be a bit careful in the market because they have got sort of issues there. And they're not, you know, massively well-resourced club, but some of their recruitment's been really clever. Dane Scarlett in from Spurs on loan. Joe Piggott's come in up front, who I think is a striker that will get goals in the Championship. And Colby Bishop, who they've got in from Accrington, I think is a really underrated centre-forward who's excellent in the air, good all-round centre-forward. And they've still got Ronan Curtis, who is an attacking threat. I look at their forward line, those four players, I think they're going to score a lot of goals this season, Portsmouth. And I think I had them down for like maybe sort of top eight team now. I would say they could challenge, you know, for the top two. And another in that league who I think could challenge for the top two is Bolton. I think they finished last season really well. And this season they started with a tough couple of games, but they've got a 1-1 draw at Ipswich, followed that with a 3-0 win at home to Wickham. They keep on recruiting well. Jack Iredale has come in at left back from Cambridge. Connor Bradley on loan, right back, coming on loan from Liverpool. I think they're two fantastic additions to an already strong squad. I think Bolton will go really well.
Okay, and so I know one of your tips for this weekend. So I'm going to lead the next question, and then you can maybe start with your best bets for the weekend. Because Stuart's got in touch, Dan, and said, has anyone impressed more than Barrow against market expectations? Now, I know that you like Barrow this weekend. So do you want to just sort of answer that question and then tell us why you fancy them to pick up another 3 points?
Well, the short answer to Stuart's question is no. I think that they probably are the team, you know, that have impressed, you know, against the market, if you like. They would have been down as one of the favourites to be relegated from League Two, and they've had two really good wins, 3-2 wins away to Stockport, who were well fancied this season, at home to Bradford, another well-fancied team. And it's not just that they won those games, it's the manner of them. They were fully deserving winners in both of those matches. Pete Wilde's come in as the new manager, who's done a great job on a reasonably modest budget at Halifax down in the National League.
I hope you were going to say shoestring and not another word like that in terms of the budget.
I was nearly going to say a shoestring, but I think Halifax, thinking about it as I was saying that, in the National League, they're a competitive budget, but he certainly had them like punching above their weight, shall we say, in the National League. And he's recruiting again. His recruitment at Halifax was good, and he's carried that on at Barrow. You look at a couple of the players he's brought in. Billy Walters, who was his top scorer at Halifax, he's come in and already scored for Barrow. Ben Whitfield, a midfielder who was out of favour at Stockport, he's brought him in and he's scored in both league games for Barrow. So he's recruiting really, really well again. And I do think, you know, looking at this weekend's game, that Barrow go to Sutton in League Two. I can see Barrow getting at least a point here. Sutton are quite warm favourites to win the game, but Barrow, to me, Barrow or draw double chance looks a really good bet. The downside for Sutton is second season in the AFL, I think, it's a little bit more tricky than the first. You know, they've not got such a, you know, on such a high after having won a promotion. They've lost a couple of key players. David Adjaboy, a really excellent winger who's gone to Peterborough. The first-choice goalkeeper, Dean Bouzanis, has gone to Reading. They've only got 1 point from the first two games, so it suggests that, you know, maybe they're not quite as strong as last season. I think they'll be fine and they're not going to get dragged into a relegation battle. But considering their start and the way that Barrow are going at the moment, I think Sutton are well worth opposing this weekend.
OK, so we've got Barrow or draw a double chance at Sutton. What else do you like this weekend?
I like, I do actually like Norwich to win at Hull. They've had a bit of a slow start in the Championship, but I fancied them at the start of the season to go well. I still think they will go well. It's understandable that first game at Cardiff that they lost 1-0 was a poor game. Maybe they're still carrying a bit of a hangover from last season when they lost a lot of games. They were a lot better in the 1-1 draw at home to Wigan when they had 70% possession, grew into that game, were better in the second half, ended up winning the shot count 22-6 against the Wigan team, who I think are going to have a nice solid season. I think they've got, looking at their squad, they've got a really strong squad, Norwich. I compare them, you know, this weekend to Hull. Hull have got 4 points somehow from the first two games, but I think they've been very, very fortunate. The first game against Bristol City, they were losing 1-0. Got a really controversial penalty decision in their favour to level it at 1-1 and then a deflected strike in injury time to win the game. Very, very fortunate there. They then drew 0-0 at Preston last weekend when they were absolutely battered. Then they've gone to Bradford in the EFL Cup and lost that game 2-1. I think that shows a more realistic idea of where Hull are. They are spending quite a bit of money. They brought in the likes of Ozan Tufan in midfield, Oscar Estupinan, a Colombian striker who scored a lot of goals for Guimarães in the Portuguese league. But both of them players have been substituted in the first two games. I'm not sure their recruitment's been right. Lost a couple of key players in Keane Lewis Potter and George Honeyman. I think they could struggle, and I think Norwich will go there and win this weekend.
We're sticking to two, or have we got a third one as well?
No, I've got a third one as well in League One. Going to go with Oxford away to Bristol Rovers. Both teams on 3 points, but I think they'll be competing at different ends of the division by the end of the season. I think Oxford have been kind of promotion chasing for the last couple of seasons. Got 76 points, last season, which would normally, you know, get you closer to the playoffs. It was such a ridiculous league last season where, you know, seven teams, I think, got 80 points or more. I still think they're a strong team. Started off with a 1-0 defeat in a tough opening game at Derby. They've responded to that with a 1-0 win at home to Cambridge, and then they've knocked Swansea out of the EFL Cup. Bristol Rovers started with a 2-1 loss at home to Forest Green. Then they won 4-0 at Burton, but that was a kind of a strange result. The first-minute red card for Burton centre-back Conor Shaughnessy, which massively affected that game. After that, they've lost 1-0 at Crawley in the EFL Cup. I think that shows more where Bristol Rovers are. They've lost a couple of key players, including Elliot Anderson, who was a fantastic loan they had from Newcastle last season. I actually think they might have a bit of a tough time staying away from the bottom four, Bristol Rovers, and I think Oxford will go there and win this weekend.
OK, so we've got Oxford to win at Bristol
Rovers. Oxford to win at Bristol Rovers, yeah.
Norwich to win at Hull, and we've also got Barrow or draw double chance at Sutton. So thanks very much, Dan.
You're welcome.
Excellent to hear from Dan, as always. You can read more of his work on Racing Post Sport online. Always worth heading over there. So much good content at the moment. Mark, let's get your best bets then for this weekend. And we'll start off with a prop shot bet.
Yes, I'm going to go for Lionel Messi. Have you heard of him, Jack?
Remind me, who's he playing for nowadays?
Yeah, so the Paris Saint-Germain. He's 130 to score first against Montpellier. Look, ordinarily, you wouldn't be going near Messi because he used to go off about sort of 6-4 when he was at his peak at Barcelona. He's playing in a different position at the moment for Paris because Mbappe's not at full fitness. He's playing through the middle. And I just think, therefore, 100-30 on him getting the first goal is interesting. He scored first in the French version of the Community Shield against Nantes and then got 2 goals against Clermont last week. He's playing with a smile on his face. Looks back to the kind of Messi that everybody sort of loved, when he was at Barcelona. I don't know what happened to him last year, but he wasn't playing like Messi can. But he looks back to his best, and 100-30 is an interesting price, I think.
Absolutely. I think that might be incredibly the first time Messi's ever been put up in a tip on Bet's Club. Could be a first.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. We'd like to avoid the obvious if we can.
Absolutely.
But sometimes it's dangerous to ignore the obvious, isn't it?
You're absolutely right. What about a long shot for this week, Mark?
Right, so I've already mentioned Leeds at a reasonable, you know, price to draw no bet at Southampton. I'm going to push the boat out further. Double figures. Southampton, well, effectively, this market is called Leeds to win from behind. So at some stage, Southampton are winning, but Leeds come back and take all 3 points. Southampton scored first in 14 home games last season. Just to put that into context, that's the same as Liverpool and only one fewer than Manchester City. So they've got a remarkable record of scoring first and, you know, getting on target quickly. Saw that last week when they went up at Tottenham. They don't seem to be able to last the pace. Three of those times where they did score first of the 14, it ended in defeat. So if you just use that as crude figures, you know, that's in your favour, really, at the kind of prices we're back in here. And yeah, I mean, Leeds have got goals in them, I think, and Southampton have got goals against them in them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, got there in the end. Let's put together a treble for this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, well, this was a shocker last week, so hopefully better this time around. We're going for Portsmouth to win at Cheltenham. Pompey only drew with Lincoln last week, but it was 15-4 on shot, 6-0 on target, and Cheltenham looked really not as good as last season, I think it's fair to say. I've said quite a lot about the unders in Chelsea against Tottenham already, but I do like under 2.5 goals there. So we've got Portsmouth to win at Cheltenham, under 2.5 goals in Chelsea v Spurs. And the link between Chelsea and Spurs, well, one of the links is Jose Mourinho. His Roma team are away to Salernitana, who pulled off the great escape last season. There's a lot of excitement at Roma after the signing of Dybala in the summer. So interested to see whether Mourinho can can really sort of, I suppose, ride that wave of optimism. I mean, probably nobody worse, really, is there? You know, try and play out a boring 0-0 draw. But I think they've got a lot in place now, Roma, to be better than they were last season. So Roma to win at Salernitana, under 2.5 goals in Chelsea against Tottenham, and Pompey to win at Cheltenham.
Yeah, like the sound of that, Mark. The nap came in last week. Let's aim for 2 in a row.
Yeah, so it's under 2.5 goals in Chelsea v Tottenham. I've just got a few other stats than the ones I've already chucked in as to why this could be a good bet. Tottenham conceded only once in their last 5 away games. So really tightened up under Antonio Conte on the road as that last season went on. Chelsea against the Big Six last season, they played 14 matches in all competition. 11 of those 14 went under 2.5.
Okay, very good. There's your best bet for this weekend. Best of luck. Let's get on to some Twitter questions. And Tom starts with a Villa question. We knew they were coming, and let's start with this then. Tom says, Gerrard and Villa must be the most overrated team in the Premier League. Surely going to be a struggle for them. Well, nothing like an overreaction from the first game, Mark. But any logic in this from Tom?
Yeah, well, I mean, last season I don't think Villa were good enough. And I think this comes down to the fact that probably Gerrard isn't getting enough criticism at the moment, because if this was some Johnny Foreigner at Villa that had replaced a popular kind of figure, if you like, in Dean Smith in terms of the media, and, you know, I think most people wanted Dean Smith to do well. There was no bad blood, was there, when he left? Imagine if this was just some guy from Spain or France that people hadn't heard of, you know, your Remy Gards, if you like, who wasn't Villa previously. You know, he'd be under a lot of pressure at the moment, given the money that Villa have spent. And, you know, Gerrard has kind of really outspoken in the press. He digs out certain players. And I think that there will be more flack coming his way. I think that they do need to get better. I think they've got a budget and ambitions now to be a top 10 team. And, you know, if you're losing 2-0 to Bournemouth with 2 shots on target, that's not that. So, I wouldn't say surely it's going to be a struggle for them just yet. Where I do agree is that I think that Gerrard has more questions to answer than that's sort of currently being put in front of him.
Yeah, spot on, Mark. Mick emailed in and said, is it too early to predict full prospects on a couple of games in? I back Norwich to finish in the top two. Mick, well, I'll have a quick word on Norwich. Obviously, it hasn't been the perfect start. Lost away to Cardiff, drew at home to Wigan. What I would say is, particularly against Wigan, Norwich should have won that game. Over 20 shots on goal, should have had a penalty. I wouldn't be too worried about that performance. As well as that, not too much turnover. There's been a few incomings. Gabriel Sara and Marcelino Nunez have come in from South America. Neither of them played in the opener. Nunez started against Wigan and looked really good. Gabriel Sara started in the cup win against Birmingham in the week. So they both look fully fit. You've also got Isaac Hayden to still come in when he returns from injury in a couple of weeks. Nobody thought that Max Aarons would be sticking about. That now looks likely. Todd Cantwell looks back up to kind of the Todd Cantwell we all fell in love with a couple of years ago now. So not the perfect start. I expect Norwich to pick up. What I would say, though, is I've been really impressed with the other two teams who've come down, Burnley and Watford. I wasn't overly sure what to expect from them, but they seem to have adapted well to the Championship. So I think we'll see an uptick from Norwich. I don't think it's going to be as easy as it has been in previous campaigns. What do you think, Mark? Overreactions are plenty, or can we read into things at this stage?
Well, I think you have to try to make some early judgments to try to beat the market in certain places. And we mentioned this on last week's show where, you know, one of the questions was, you know, can we start to draw opinions after one game? I think you're always trying to build a picture in your head after one game, two games, six games, you know, 38 games as to what a team is like. But I mean, I think two matches is way too early for full prospects. You can start putting teams on your radar and maybe both in positive and negative form, but I wouldn't be making sweeping judgments after a couple of games.
Okay, yeah, spot on. Steve, I think we spoke about the World Cup in last season's edition of Bet Club, and I know you put up an early fancy in terms of who will win it, but Steve wants to know if there's any early fancies in terms of the golden boot market.
Crazy, isn't it? It's only a couple of months away. Oh, I mean, it might even start tomorrow.
That's true, actually.
If Qatar wanted to, you know, we'll have to wait and see when Qatar want to start the World Cup, seeing as they want to move it again now to a day earlier. Look, I mean, it still feels a little bit early, even though it's in a couple of months. It's weird, isn't it? Psychologically, if we were in like March time, you'd start to be thinking World Cup. Because the sun's out, I'm not really thinking World Cup. But because Steve put this question in, I've had a couple of looks. Yeah, it's that bloke Messi again. You know, I've uncovered one that might be quite good in the future. Look, Messi 16-1. I think he's absolutely settled now with his role within that Argentina national team. He's playing well for them. The team's built around him. I still think he's a goal machine. And I think that just last season was one of them things for him where he just didn't, for what, you know, maybe didn't like Pochettino, maybe didn't like what was going on at Paris. I don't know. Maybe moving from Barca, but he already looks back to his sort of, you know, to the levels we expect. And if he is 16-1 for Messi, I think always gives you a run for your money. At double his price and at the other end of his career, Vinicius Junior for Brazil. The question mark is whether Vinicius can get himself into that starting 11 because, you know, Richarlison and Gabriel Jesus are fighting for a couple of spots. You've got Neymar in there as well. But I just think that Vinicius is playing so well that you can't leave him out. You know, he's become such an important player for Real Madrid, scored in the Champions League final, you know, a scorer of big goals. I mean, he's the type of player that this World Cup, if he's not already kind of established in that kind of superstar status, I think this is the perfect age for him now to really step up. And, you know, I didn't want to just leave it at Messi. You always want somebody at a bit of a bigger price. And Vinicius is the kind of person, come the next World Cup, you could be looking at a sort of 12-1 shot because, you know, he's fully established with the Brazilian national team and scoring loads of goals for Real Madrid. You've got to try and get in before the market's fully caught up with how good he could be.
Excellent. Well, there you go, Steve. There's some early fantasies from Mark. And that concludes today's show. That was brilliant fun. I think we've been working Mark a little bit hard, though, because he notified me early that he's off to Tenerife for a couple of weeks. That'll be fun.
Oh, well, it should be. As long as the kids don't play up, it'll be fun. It'll be fun for me. I have my AirPods in, listening to podcasts, sat on a sun lounger, trying to find a decent bar to watch the Tottenham matches while, you know, trying to do water parks and other things like that. So, it's a shame we're going to have to put... We did discuss, didn't we, whether we should do like Lorraine does. When Lorraine goes on holiday, she just brings in a couple of other people and they still call it Lorraine. I think we decided that it might be a bit weird if Dan Childs or James Milton does the Mark Langdon's Bets Club. So I apologise for taking 2 weeks off in the football season. Don't blame me though. Blame those pesky headmasters that make you go in the school holidays. And
absolutely.
Or why can't the school holidays a bit align with the football season?
Well, that would make perfect sense. I'm actually away next week as well, Mark. I'm off to Madrid, and I'll give you one guess as to why I'm going, and I bet you won't get it.
Well, I mean, I would have thought it was to see Norwich in some sort of friendly match against Atletico or Real Madrid, no?
No, I'm actually going to watch my first ever women's football match. Manchester City women against Real Madrid women in a Champions League qualifier.
It was like a big qualifier, that.
Yeah, I know. It doesn't really make sense, does it? But Norfolk's finest, Lauren Hemp, is playing. So we're heading out to watch her play. So hopefully that'll be good fun. We will be back on the 1st of September. So put a big scroll across the 1st of September in your diary. Bets Club will be returning then. Until then, we hope you have lots of luck with your bets. Please do remember to gamble responsibly. Lots of selections have been put up within the last 40 minutes or so. Please don't feel the need to back them all. Until then, RacingPost.com will keep you covered with all of your football betting requirements. Stay safe in the sun, and we'll see you all again very soon. Bye-bye.